This segment of the Bass Kayak and Beers podcast is sponsored in part by Dark Horse Tackle. Go to darkhorsetackle.com and use promo code BKB5 to save an extra $5 when you build your own box. Douglas Outdoors, serious rods for serious anglers. Norsk Lithium. The lithium kayak battery you need is just a click away. Go to norsklithium.com. Catch Outdoors, the official measuring board for all three national trails. Go to catchoutdoors.com and use promo code BKB5 to save 5% on your next online purchase. All right, everyone. Hope you're having a wonderful Thursday. We got a great episode for you today. Let me get something squared off here. I'm always kind of like all over the place when it comes to starting this podcast. Got a lot of things going on. But anyways, we have a great episode for you today. We got Ryan Reed. You might know him as the real Yak Dragger. I love his social media content. I think it's very organic and it really... very entertaining, and obviously he has a huge following, which he's truly has earned with what he does. So I was been excited to bring him on the podcast. He recently catched a top 10 finish and a check on the national trail on the Bassmaster Kayak Series, which I'm kind of jealous, but at the same time happy for him, because that's always kind of been a goal of me, just kind of grow the social media sides of things. But at the same time, my real love for this is competing and being able to do good in a tournament. Not necessarily maybe the money, but just in general, do good at a tournament. So I'm excited to bring him on the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, his social media content, his growth, and what he's trying to do in this space to grow his both as an angler and his social media. So I'm a little bit distracted because I try to put this on, I try to put it on social media on, try to see if I can get it back on Instagram, but I did practice instead of public. So it's not playing on Instagram, but if you watch it on YouTube and on, Facebook, feel free to leave us your comments. Let me know if you have any questions for our guests or for myself. We'll try to do the best we can to answer your questions. But anyways, before we continue, we thank you to our sponsors, Norsk Lithium, Douglas Outdoors, Dark Horse Tackle, Catch Outdoors, and also our new partner, Mariner Sales, probably the biggest inventory in kayak. Dealer and also in accessories here in the DFW Metroplex. If you're out of state, you can also shop online at marinersales.com. With that in mind, let's bring in our guest for today. Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time to coming up to the podcast, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to be here. Love talking fishing with anybody and everybody.
What got you into fishing, first of all?
You know, I grew up in the Midwest, Missouri specifically, fishing, as does most young men at my age. Dad would take me and my brother out, and that was great. You know, had a family friend that kind of taught me more about the bass side of it, and then fell away from it, really. Getting older, just kind of fell away from it. And then after I grew up, became an adult, did some military service, got out, restarted my adult life. I really kind of fell back into the kayak fishing world, and that was 2016, and I haven't turned back. So,
and kayak fishing. When did you realize in kayak fishing that? Hold on, sorry about that. That this was something like a next level thing that you fell in love with. You know, like. From going, I'm assuming you started bank fishing, or did when you started bass fishing, it was strict. You started out of a kayak or more of or from a boat.
Yeah, I mean, as a kid, you know, we did quite a bit of bank fishing, but we had a little John boat we would mess around in. I've I would say of all my fishing time, I would bet 90% of it's been from some kind of watercraft, whether that be a boat, John boat, a kayak, whatever. But I have done my share of bank fishing as well. Yeah.
And was bass fishing always the go-to fish when you started fishing? Or was something like, for me, I remember with my dad, he didn't know anything about fishing. Obviously, neither did I. I was just, you know, by probably 5-7 years old. So it was more about getting some worms and catching whatever bite with it. Was your dad avid bass fisherman, or was more kind of like the same thing, more focused on the, you know, the father-son relationship, or were you really out there to, you know, fish specific like lures, specific techniques, specific?
Yeah. I mean, really, you know, it was about catching whatever we could. He didn't care what we were catching, but no matter what we caught, we were taking it home. That was going to be dinner that night. Plain and simple, you know, we didn't struggle for food, but it was nice to know that, you know, hey, that night we didn't have to worry about what we bought from the grocery store. You know, we brought fish home, and that was what we had for dinner that night. So that was nice. He didn't care about bass fishing so much. And to this day, he still does a little bit of fishing. He's actually got one of my kayaks at his house right now. And he does a little bit of bass fishing, but he prefers to catfish, run jug lines, things like that, which is great. It's not really my speed. You know, I prefer the chase of the bass, but that's what he likes. And, you know, it was more about getting us out more than it was searching for those green fish, you know, back then.
It's interesting when we talk about bass fishing, because for the most part, like you said, when people fish for catfish, crappie, white bass, stripers, it's mostly catch and cook, right?
Yeah.
But bass fishing, it's for the most part, not everyone, right? But for the most part, a lot of people, it's just a sports fishing. It's just catch and release. And it's interesting because it is the hardest fish to catch. So it's kind of like I've always thought about it. Interesting. It's like, let me see what's the hardest way to catch fish, or the hardest fish to catch. And typically bass fishermen don't even use live lures. I mean, live bait. It's like, let's find the hardest way to catch the hardest fish there is on the lake. So it's always interesting to me how we go from like throwing worms. I remember I used to just go to the bank and dig hole in the mud until I find the worms, you know, the night crawlers, put it on a hook and throw it in. And now it's like, that was the easiest way to catch. Now I'm looking for the hardest way to catch. But it's like you said, it says chase. It's kind of like a hunt,
yep,
right?
It is. It's it's the competitive side. You don't see any bass anglers that only do it for recreation. They're almost always competitive to whatever level.
Eli Self was commenting on Instagram. It says muskie's definitely harder, but bass can be tough. I agree. I think muskie's harder, but because it's only mostly in the northern states, that's why I don't think it's grown. And the other thing is muskie's muskie's only in Texas, in the United States.
Really? I didn't know that. That's news.
Yeah, I learned that from Christine Fisher. I went to Sweden this summer, and I was taking some videos, and I shared it with Christine Fisher through DMs. I told her, is this a muskie or a pike? Miss, like, where are you at? And she's like, I'm told I'm in Sweden. I was like, oh, no, there's muskies only in the United States. I'm like, oh, really? I didn't know that either. So that's interesting. But yes, muskie is probably harder. It's just not as popular.
Yeah. I mean, they call it the fish of 10,000 casts for a reason. You know, I've never caught a big one. I've only caught small ones. And
by the way, Ryan, catch a big one. You live in Missouri, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Headquarters of bass.
Yeah.
Born and raised. Always lived there.
Not always. You know, the only time I left was when I was in the military for 6 years, and then I kind of lived all over the place. But then as soon as I got out, I came right back. So.
Oh, yes. You mentioned you were in the military on deployment. So what's your personal best as far as bass fishing?
So largemouth was a sorry.
That was me last week, by the way.
Oh, man.
And I'm still trying to get over it.
This pollen is killing us in the Midwest here.
Yeah, same here.
So my biggest largemouth was caught in Texas last year at Lake Fork. You know, a measly 7.5 in Lake Fork. So it was a slot fish, so it wasn't even that big for Lake Fork. But that was my biggest largemouth. And then my biggest smallmouth is a 19 and a quarter inch, I think. And I didn't have a scale that day. It was at La Crosse, Wisconsin last year as well. Couldn't get my scale to work, so I didn't have a scale to measure it. And it was an awesome catch, though. It was a topwater frog bite.
Oh, can't ask for anything better than that.
Yeah, so, and that was a blast. But that's my two best for the black bass.
What got you into doing the social media? So you've been, like I said, mentioned, I'm very impressed with your social media. It's very organic. It's very entertaining. And it's all about bass fishing. What got you into it? And what do you think has been the key to having so much success with it, you know, growing, you know, in a time right now, growing social media, especially with fishing, it's kind of saturated and not easy to stand out, but you have something like almost 100,000 followers on Instagram. How were you able to achieve that? And do you ever thought it would grow this big?
So the first answer is I grew it by luck, you know, kind of like anybody that else does it. You know, it comes down to a lot of consistency. So don't get me wrong. It takes work to do it, but you know, I know a lot of people that do all the work and that they don't seem to have the same rewards that I'm seeing. And you know, the other side of that is I work with some really awesome anglers that are really good at shooting content. And, you know, we go out and shoot content together. And, you know, like I've been doing this for, I lean to say 3 years, but I might be close to four. I started it with Dust Off Fishing, Brandon Heimrichs. I think you know.
Yes, we had him on the podcast. Good dude.
Yeah, so love that guy. He lives pretty close to me. And, you know, we linked up on Instagram back before I really did much Instagram and started fishing together, shooting content. And it just kind of grew exponentially from there. And, you know, I've been lucky to fish in some unique kayaks that help with the algorithm. And that's just the growth has just been kind of part of that.
One of the things that I really, to me, when you look at content creators, one of the things that I struggle with at least is putting my rod down and actually filming kind of like the B-rolls, yeah. Because it's not always about a hook set, right? To me, I just put a GoPro behind me and whatever I catch, if I like it, I'll post it. But you do a lot of like, you know, like you mentioned, cameraman or drone shots and all that.
Yeah.
Do you get that? Is it hard for you to kind of like put the rod down and say, okay, I got to kind of make a little video here just to, you know, to produce the content or to keep up the algorithms?
I don't struggle with that unless it's in a tournament. Even practice for a tournament, I'll struggle with it a decent amount. But if I'm just fun fishing with my buddies, I honestly don't care how much I have the fishing pole in my hand, you know, unless the fish are just going crazy, you know, that's a different story. But some of our best days of content have come from days when the fish weren't even biting.
Yeah.
You know, we'd only catch one, two fish during an entire outing. And people love to see fish. Don't get me wrong, but I see it as people see fish on every page. What they don't see is, you know, I call it the premium lifestyle of kayak fishing. You know, not everybody wants to or has the ability to spend, you know, let's say $5,000 on an Old Town Autopilot, a Hobie PA, or the Flipcat. You know, we'd kind of mentioned before about my Flipcat. People don't really have the ability or the need or desires to buy those, but they love to live vicariously through those people that do have them. So seeing a fish catch in one of these other kayaks is more intriguing to them. And that's what I think has helped my algorithm so well. It's just fishing out of these, you know, premium kayaks and that helps.
Do you have a YouTube channel as well? It's just mainly Instagram.
I do have YouTube, but I honestly, I hate YouTube. you know, I don't hate YouTube. I hate doing content on YouTube, I should say.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, I don't like long form. I don't have the time to do it. I'm a full-time stay-at-home dad. So I can't imagine taking hours to edit a video along with managing my toddler who needs me literally all day, every day. But Instagram and TikTok, it's really easy for me to just throw together a 7 to 10 second video and then put it out there with some training audio and let the algorithm do its thing.
What recommendations do you have to anybody that wants to grow their social media as far as Instagram or TikTok?
Honestly, it's slightly different, really. And people don't realize this, I don't think, is that each platform is totally different on what it wants you to do. Yep. So pick one platform at a time and grow it before you worry about another one. The best example for that is Instagram cares more about your consistency of publishing content than it does the effort you put into creating it.
Yeah, I've learned that the hard way.
Yeah, TikTok cares more about the content itself than your consistency. So if you put together a really good edit and you put it out there and people really latch to it, they're going to promote it through the, I don't know, what do they call it? The
algorithm.
Page. Yeah. I don't know.
Something like that.
And
yeah.
And then Instagram, it's like, well, you could have this really awesome piece of content, but if you don't post enough for them, they're not going to show it to anybody. And I agree with both sides of it. I think that there's the benefit there to say, well, you know, one content creator is putting out tons of content for people to consume. So the algorithm can reward that. And then the other one rewards the person that puts in lots of effort. So just know which one you're better at and then focus on that one first. And then that will help your growth on the next page as well.
Yeah, I think so. One hand watches the other kind of thing. I don't know how the saying goes.
Yeah, but it does.
I know what you mean. Let's talk a little bit about the Flipkat. So you have a very interesting, I don't know if it's called a small vessel. I should say man-powered vessel. It is similar to, I think, who used to make, was it? There was a kayak manufacturer that used to make something similar to that. I haven't seen it. I don't think it's a lot.
I want to say you're thinking of the Jackson Blue Sky.
Yes, Jackson Blue Sky. Mm-hmm. This is similar
it's
to that.
Still it's out there.
Yeah. It is.
All right. People still fish it out of the Bassmaster Kayak Series. There's a guy fishing in the series this year out of one.
Oh, cool. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen anybody on a national trail use it, so I wasn't sure if it was allowed or not. But the Flipkat, is that a partnership you have with the company that manufactures it, or that's something that you just bought one and you enjoy it fishing out of?
Yeah, it is. It is a partnership. So last year, I was living in Texas, and my wife is a travel nurse, so we were traveling with her, and I just saw their page and loved it. I was like, that's a pretty cool kayak. And first of all, the biggest question, and I don't know if it's a question, statement, I guess I get, is that it's not a kayak. Everybody says, that's not a kayak. That's a pedal boat. It's a catamaran kayak, plain and simple. Doesn't matter, you know, which set of rules you want to look at. Bass, Hobie, most local trails, it's considered a kayak. It's only 36 inches wide. It's only 11 feet long. It's just a catamaran kayak. So no different than the Blue Sky Boatworks, which is also legal in all tournaments. So it is a kayak. It is definitely on the edge of what you would say is a kayak. And no, it's not traditional, but it is a kayak. Moving on from that. So the company is called Noisy River Outdoors. They are based out of, I want to say the city is High Point, North Carolina. I'm like 95% sure about that. And I talked to them, said I was really interested in their kayak, wanted to see it. Man, sorry.
No, I get it, man. Last week I was the same way. No worries.
I said, yeah, I wanted to see your kayak. Are you guys doing like a tour where like these, this is in different areas and I can see one? And they said, no, we're not. But if you're ever in North Carolina, let us know and you can see it. I said, okay. Completely forgot about it, honestly. Was living in North Carolina for a couple months last year. And the last like 3 weeks I was there, I was like, oh man, I forgot about this kayak. I want to go see it. So I hit him up. We met up and had a lot of fun just meeting them. Super, super nice people. And it's a super small company. And shot some content. They liked what I did. I liked what they had. And they called me back. We talked about product development because their kayak is still very new to the market. So it's still developing. You know, we're trying to make better motor mounts and things like that so that you can put torpedoes, new ports, whatever you want on it. And so I am working with them this year on, you know, we call it the product development side of it, but a lot of it is in brand recognition. That's where my social media side comes in. They wanted brand recognition. And, you know, I've been able to fortunately give that to them in a big way this year. I'll call it lucky. I had a huge viral video that just blew up.
Yeah, I saw that one. Like 29 million, something like that.
Right? Yeah, it's something like 29 and a half million right now. Yeah. It's still going, but it's very slow. It might hit 30 million before it really dies, but, you know, that was awesome. You know, that's why they brought me on. So for me to be able to turn around and, you know, give them that sales boost that they needed, that was awesome for me to, you know, hit what they expected from me right off the bat. And that kind of gave me the whole rest of the year to just do even more for them. So it's a great partnership with a great company. I do fish it in tournaments locally. I don't do it for the national trails. I only do it in some local events. I don't want to try and travel the country and try to unfold a portable kayak at a boat ramp with, you know, 200 people in a tournament. So
yeah,
we're working on different parts of that. That's part of that product development side to where it can be more useful in that. But until we get there, I'm going to stick to my old town autopilot.
Let's talk a little bit about your tournaments. You cast your first check, top 10 finish at a National Trail Bassmaster. That's something that, like I said, I kind of envy you in a healthy way, right? Of course. But at the same time, I'm happy for you. Because that's one of my goals. I've done good at local trails, but never at the national trails. And I saw your post on it. I'm like, man, I want to know what that feeling is. So what was that feeling for you? Again, you got a top 10, which is more than a respectable. That's a great placement on a tournament that was 172 anglers. Mm-hmm. I know it ended up being a one-day tournament versus a two-day tournament. But how ecstatic were you about catching your first check on a national trail?
Yeah, so I mean, it felt great. You know, I did the entire Bassmaster Trail last year. I did all five events last year, and then I did the championship already this year. And I felt like trying to grow as an angler was probably my biggest thing last year. I wasn't so concerned about, am I going to cash checks or not? It was more about, can I learn how to break down water? And then I had some good finishes. I made the championship. That was awesome. And then this year I was like, okay, now it's time to try and show up and actually see what I can do and prove myself. And, you know, being able to stand out on the national scene, it gives you that credibility, you know, whether that's on the social media side of kayak fishing or whether that's just from purely the tournament side, you know, being able to cast checks, people respect you a little bit more because they know you're not just, you know, saying whatever you're getting paid to say. You know, I worked pretty hard to get there and I trusted a lot of gut reactions to get there. And being a one day tournament, you know, I'd love to say that, that didn't have any effect on my play, but I think having a one day tournament, I was able to go out and just swing for the fences. and not worry so much about, you know, do I need to try and save fish, things like that. But, you know, I just went out purely trusting my instincts. And, you know, like you said, it was a 1 day tournament because the first day got canceled due to high winds. Day two, the winds weren't supposed to be much better. And so a lot of people were worried about going out and searching for new waters, searching for fish. And like I said before, I'm in an old town autopilot for my tournaments, and I wasn't worried about that. I wasn't worried about it on day one when they canceled. You know, obviously there are people that are and that shouldn't be in those positions. But as a seasoned kayaker, as somebody that's in a very nice kayak, that I wasn't concerned with weather like that, I was able to risk it a little bit more to find those fish. And it paid off. Would it have paid off in a 2 day tournament? Who knows? I lean to say, yeah, probably would have, because I would have still been out there doing the same thing, finding new waters that people were afraid to venture out to. But it worked out. It felt awesome, honestly. You know, getting the Gilmore check, you know, that was awesome. That felt good. It really made you feel like all the work you put into it was worth it.
That's a good point. Let me ask you this. Did it lessen in your mind? Did it lessen the value because it was not a 2 day tournament? Because I understand that it would feel more satisfaction when you say I was able to do it for 2 days, which is kind of why the reason national trails are a little bit more expensive and a little bit higher payout, because they kind of want to eliminate the luck factor of somebody that's good enough to bass fish, but just happened to have a lucky day. You know, there's a plan involved when there's a 2 day. You can't have the same bass, even though you caught it on two different days. You cannot have it on the same, you know, you can't count for both days. So there's a lot of strategy involved. Obviously, it kind of eliminates the luck factor out of it. Does it lessen the value for you personally, or do you just feel like it doesn't matter? It's your first check on a national trail.
You know, honestly, I don't think it does for me. I think it could for some people, but, you know, I didn't go into this blind. I didn't go into it just hoping a prayer of what was going to happen. I had a solid game plan. I executed the game plan. I fished in an area that I'd gone through in practice. I had marked bedding fish. And then I went back and I executed it, plain and simple. So to say, you know, does it feel any less? No, it doesn't. Still feels great. You know, the plan was there, it was executed. And, you know, to say it was luck is one thing, but the other side is, if you look at the guys that cashed checks, there was only, I think it was three Texas guys that cashed a check. So if it was luck,
only one in the top 10. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there was three Missourians in the top 10.
I was about to talk to you about that. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It goes to show that. So Possum Kingdom is a unique fishery for Texas. It actually leans more towards the Ozarks because it's clear water.
Yep.
It wasn't as clear because a lot of the lake got blown out from the storms and the rain. But it still fished a lot like a Ozark reservoir. And that's why Missouri guys showed up and they did so well. And a lot of Texas guys struggled because it just didn't fish like a typical Texas reservoir did. So it came down to guys that went in with game plans and was able to execute.
And that's a good point. I think I was going to ask you on that. Why do you think there was so many, you know, top three Missouri guys, in the top 10, there was three Missouri guys. And because that's a big contrast of when we saw, like, there were more Texas anglers, I think, that either skunk or didn't catch a limit, myself included, than the ones that are catch a check. I think there were 61 anglers, and like you mentioned, Texas anglers, and only three catch a check, and a bunch of them just, and big names, by the way, which I'm not going to mention because obviously I'm not here to show to anybody. And they're some of the best anglers that we've seen both locally and nationally, but yet I struggle with it. What to me, what was very interesting about the lake is it was a huge contrast in transitions. Like I literally saw a 20 inch, I would say, or 18 to 20 inch bedding female on my left, and literally, I'm going to say about 15 feet I saw a male guarding Frey. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, we are in completely, you know, it, at this close range, it's just polar opposites.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was just, I know for every Texas anglers, it was like, what is going on here? Like, we couldn't, most of us just really couldn't figure it out.
And realistically, right. I mean, Texas just, I mean, you know, most everybody I've ever fished with from Texas, they're just going to struggle on clear water more often than not because Texas is so dirty. You go to Lake Fork, you go to the Caddo, you go to, let's say, Grapevine if you're in the DFW area. Louisville gets kind of clear, but still a pretty dirty lake. You know, I think Rayburn's pretty dirty too. I never got out on Rayburn, but I think it's dirty.
It's just stained water, yeah. Possum Kingdom is as clear as it gets. Maybe Steelhouse gets a little bit more clear in Travis Lake.
But a lot of Texans just aren't used to that. And us Missourians were used to bed fishing that crystal clear water. And so I think that gave us a little bit of an advantage with the time that we were there.
Yeah. By the way, shout out to the people that are watching Three the Hard Way, Gerald Swindle on YouTube. Thank you for joining us. And Jack Tibbins says, got all my fish on beds. I'm assuming he also fished the same, another comment here. Nope. Another Northeastern guys like myself ran to clear water. Yeah, south part of the lake was, I would fish the mid side of the lake, midsection of the lake, and it was a lot clearer than I've ever seen it before, which kind of surprised me because of the storms. North part of the lake was a little bit more stained. I didn't fish the south side, not even for pre-fishing, so I'm assuming it was even clearer then. I did catch all my fish bedding, except for one. But yeah, it was interesting. But another factor was like the cove that we fish. It was like a lot of people thought the same thing you were saying. Like, I don't want to venture out because the wind forecast for Sunday was still, you know, 20, 30 mile per hour wind, which never happened. I mean, I got out there. My plan was like, I'm heading out, you know, lines out. I want to be at my offshore point. Try to get maybe three at least, which I caught in pre-fishing. And then when the winds pick up, if it gets kind of hairy, then head back to the cove. And the wind never came. I mean, it got to maybe 10 miles per hour at the most, maybe 15, but it never materialized into the 20, 30 mile per hour winds. And when I got back to the cove, it's like, everybody and their mother, not just kayak anglers, but also boat anglers, bank fishermen, everybody targeting bedding bass. Which they were kind of moving up. But it's interesting. I didn't see any of those bedding bass in pre-fishing, but all of a sudden, terminant day, I don't know that much about biology, but I find it interesting. So Saturday, our tournament day was canceled, and so was, I think, the bass boat tournament. There was a local club that was hosting a tournament, and I think they got canceled as well. And I wonder if that because those fish are getting hammered, like pre-fishing. I mean, that's probably as pressured as those bass are ever going to get. So my theory is that Saturday, where the wind moving, they were able to kind of camouflage a little bit more on the banks because of the, you know, moving water. I think that gave them the guts to go and start bedding. Maybe, I don't know, because I never saw any of those. I did saw a couple, but not as many as I did on Sunday.
So, I mean, you know, I'll say this. So I fished History on Possum Kingdom. You know, it's the exact same area I fished last year at Possum Kingdom for the event. And I went back on practice on Friday. And I went straight there, motored straight to it. And I went driving around on my kayak, standing up. And I just started marking beds. Anytime I'd see a fish that looked like it was remotely on a bed, I'd drop a waypoint on it. And when I came back on tournament day, they were all there, and plus a couple more. So, I mean, I knew that the fish were there, but, you know, some days, you know, you got to say it's just your day. And I say that because when I got to my spot, I launched at one of the BRA ramps. I don't remember what it was called. I was in a big marina. I went out. We launched with, I think there was 14 of us that launched together. And I was the only person that went the way that I went. Nobody else went my way. I motored all the way down, lines in, fished the entire day. I had, I think, maybe two bass boats that went through the entire day, and they were in that area for less than an hour combined, and they left. And I had one kayaker that came in at the very last half an hour of the day. Nobody else disturbed my entire area for really? That entire day. So all of these fish only had me to concern about. So if I'd go through and I'd spook some off that I wanted to come back on, I'd just leave them for half an hour and then come back because nobody else came through. You know, it was just, it was one of those days that it was just meant to be for me to have that day that I had.
Stars aligned. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, cause what are the chances that, you know, on a beautiful Sunday that we ended up having that two bass boats went through there. When I was there for PK last year, that same area, we probably had 20 bass boats and kayakers go through there. And it was just, you know, it was just meant to be that day.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting day in Possum Kingdom. And like, again, we talked about it, the standings, you look at it, most anglers, Texas anglers, I think Jeff Isham did pretty well catch a check. I can't remember. Somebody else got into the top 10, but I can't remember.
Yeah, Jeff was like top 30, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a fun tournament, though. It was fun, and Possum King is always a beautiful lake. What are your?
I had that one on my calendar. I was excited for that one as soon as they released it. I wasn't super excited that so much of the trail was basically just running it back. But Possum Kingdom, I was looking forward to. And that's not a far drive for me. Possum Kingdom was only just over 7 hours for me. So that's not bad.
Really? 7 hours? I thought it'd be more. I know I haven't gone as far as Missouri, but I've gone to that border between Missouri and Arkansas. Well, yeah, I guess that's, I did like 5 hours.
Yeah.
Very beautiful area, by the way.
An hour off the border. Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful up here. I mean, I love the Ozarks, the hills, you know, obviously we got beautiful rivers up here. So
Jack Tibbins says 30 hours for me. I'm assuming, Jack, you're from upstate New York.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
prop. I have a lot of respect for anglers that do that, man. 30-hour drive.
Yeah.
God, you got all my respect. That one, man.
That would probably be pretty shut off for me. The longest I've done last year was 17 from Florence, South Carolina to the lacrosse event. I think is Jack the is he the old town guy? I don't remember.
I don't know. He has the Macho Man there thumbnail, so I'm playing Jack. But Connecticut. He's from Connecticut.
That was an old town guy, I think.
Oh, maybe you met him.
He did really well. Anyway, so yeah, I did. We were staying up on the Iowa border, and Jack Tibbins. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw him up there. Yeah, that's awesome, man. So
doing another 17-hour drive.
He's doing Guntersville, so I'll see him there because that one's another halfway short one. I think that one's 8.5 for me. I'm definitely doing Guntersville, but Guntersville kicked my butt last year. The one I'm not looking forward to this year is going to be another 17-hour drive for me, and that's going to be Susky.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to do it. I don't like the drive. There's not a real benefit for me to fish that tournament unless I cash a check. You know, it's a lot of money out with almost no real value coming back. You know, we've kind of talked about how my biggest thing is social media. It's not the tournament world. You know, I'm not going to these events thinking I'm cashing checks. So for me to put that investment in, I have to see some kind of ROI from the content side, which doesn't usually come from the tournaments. You know, I get very little content from tournaments because I'm more focused on the tournament than I am the content. So it's hard for me to justify those big trips. But this is honestly probably my last year in the national trails. So
really, why is that?
Yeah. Just a bigger fish to fry, really. You know, like I said, I got a young toddler. He's 2.
Yes.
He'll be 3 this fall. And, he has a lot of developmental issues, and we're gonna have to get him into some stuff this fall, and I just expect next year to just be too much on my plate for me to think about traveling.
Christopher Muñiz says, good evening, gentlemen. That, that's obviously family is more important, and we wish you the best with, you know, all the decisions. I know, I'm sure you have a lot of important decisions that you and your wife have to really sit down and go over as to what direction you're going to take to, you know, to help your son in whatever it is that he needs help with. So we wish you the best on that moving forward. Yeah. Obviously, is the most important thing.
I love the trips. Honestly, I do love exploring new areas, going to these destination lakes, I guess you can call them, whatever. And I don't know if you know Jake Heppner. He's on social media. He's Il Yakin is his handle. He's from Illinois. We do a lot of content together, and we do the national trail together right now. We've been talking about how we could focus on doing trips that are at these big lakes, but not tournament based. And we could just go make a 4-day trip out of it and purely shoot content. And, you know, you can take families if you want, and everybody can do stuff rather than just having these tournaments where you're just hyper focused on patterning fish and going from there.
Yeah, I think that's part of the side, I think, of bass fishing tournament wise that a lot of people don't understand. Like, to me, it was kind of eye opening when I started rooming with other anglers that are out there to catch checks, to win AOYs, to, you know, grow their mm-hmm. brand and get sponsorship. And the mentality is the fun is in fishing. There's no like, let's go out, have a few drinks, let's go shoot. No, there's like, get up, even for pre-fishing, get up at 3 a.m., head to the lake, spend as much time in daylight as you can. Pre-fishing, come home tired, re-rigged everything, go do it again a second day or maybe a third day of pre-fishing. Go to the captain's meeting, try to go to bed early, get up. It's like literally for 5 days, you're only sleeping like literally 2 or 3 hours a night. You're spent. Yeah. You're not out there to socialize. You're not out there to have fun. Granted, some people are, but a lot of the anglers, I was like, this is all business. This is like going to work. And I still have fun, but it's a different kind of mentality if you want to have fun. Yeah.
And people don't realize that really is that, you know, you go with a whole house of guys and you think, oh, this is going to be a blast. And half the guys are sleeping on, you know, the floor, the couch and a blow up air mattress. You know, everybody's trying to conserve money because this is an expensive hobby to have.
Yeah.
And then like you're saying, you're not getting any rest, you know, after you've fished for 5 days straight, especially once you start getting, you know, our age, your body's wearing out. You don't have the ability to do that for that long sustainability and have fun doing it. So to try and pile on drinking all night with it, you know, I like to have fun as much as the next guy, but not on tournament weeks.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think a lot of people that want to do this, especially like if you're local, maybe it's not that big of a deal if you're sleeping at your own home and the lake is like within an hour, that's different. You know, the lake, blah, blah, blah. But when you're traveling, that's something you have to keep in mind. If you're in it to catch checks, you're going to have to work hard for it unless you're really, really, really talented.
Yeah.
I think it's still fun, but it's definitely a workout. Before you kind of like put a pause in your next year for national trails, obviously you want to win as much as you can, even if you can't a classic. But any like more, you know, realistic maybe is relative to your talents and your means. But for you, what is a realistic goal that you want to have before you put it on pause next year?
I don't see myself as this hyper competitive, really good tournament angler. You know, I'm a really good recreational fisherman. But, you know, obviously I can have my good tournaments. Last year I finished like 20, I think I was like maybe 25th or something. I don't remember, in the AOY standings. This year,
very respectable,
starting off strong. Thanks. I would love to finish, you know, in that top 10. If I could have a top 10 AOY and take home one more Gilmore check this year, I think that would feel great. That'd be kind of the, hey, you had a really great year. It's time to step off the gas and just focus on the family for a while. That would kind of be that signal to say, hey, like, you know, this is the time.
I'm assuming you're trying to qualify for next year Bassmaster Classic, which is here in Fort Worth, which is kind of works out for you because it's going to be like a 5-hour drive, maybe less.
Yeah.
Is that your plan?
I mean, yes and no. You know, I've got some pretty good connections in the kayak world. So I've got some pretty decent ideas of kind of where the classic is headed, or the championship, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it's going to be in Fort Worth. It's going to be great. I've got family that live there in Dallas, so I could go spend the time with them. And, you know, I fished the championship this year, so that'd be great. But depending on what lake they put it on, I don't care if I qualify or not. I'm just not going to fish it. Just because if I don't like the lake, I'm not going to go down there to fish it. If the goal is to step off the national trail, I don't see a reason to go down and fish it.
Yeah.
You know, I lean back to say, you know, I'm a social media guy. I'm not a tournament guy. So for me to spend the $400 entry fee, the $500, that's probably not 500, let's say $300 in an Airbnb, you know, the gas.
$300 Airbnb, which one are you getting?
Well, that's
I wish I could find him at that price.
You got to travel with the crew.
Oh, that's true. We did
the championship there in Tenkiller. That one was close for me. It was only 5 hours. I think we spent $240 per person for the whole week, Airbnb. But we had 9 guys in the house, and I was on an air mattress. So, you know, that's an expensive $240 to sleep on an air mattress.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when you think about a good price, when you think about it all relative. I'm sleeping on an air mattress. Yeah, that's a little bit expensive.
But I was there for the whole week. So, I mean, it was like, it is what it is. But that's a lot of money to drop for somebody that's not even chasing the national trail next year. And obviously that tournament has no correlation with what happens in the national side. It's just more about keeping the focus at home rather than the fishing. You know, I tend to keep my mind of fishing on a calendar year. Once December 31st hits, you know, that year is over. I don't care. Like, my mind's changing to where I'm at home for 2025. I don't care about, you know, the national stuff. I don't care about the classic. My sponsors don't pay me to fish tournaments. They don't pay me to fish the championship. They pay me for my social media, not for my tournament side. Sure, they like to see that, but, you know, that's just not what I'm here for.
Christopher Muniz asks, when is the right time to jump from a local league to a national league? I would think it really depends on what your goals is. Christopher, you want to take that question?
It depends where you're at, really.
Yeah.
I don't really care how good of an angler you are. If you live in the East Coast, or really even, let's just say the border of, let's line it all the way from Virginia all the way around to Louisiana. Maybe you can throw Texas in there, but at least to Louisiana. If you live in any of those border states, your tournament national trails are probably going through you 2 times a year.
Yep.
Bass is in Texas twice, you know, let's call Caddo Texas, you know, it's Louisiana, Texas. They're in Texas twice. Bass went to South Carolina last year, again this year. They were on the Georgia border last year, so there's that. Susky's recurring. They do a lot in Tennessee. So if you live in those coastal eastern states, you can get into you can make that jump to the national trail now. You know, if you don't mind spending the money, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be willing, you know, a local trail is going to cost you, let's just say $70 for an entry fee. I feel pretty like much. That's probably pretty standard. Local to Bass, The difference is maybe a little bit higher, higher level of competition. But if you're a local, you automatically go into it with an edge over a guy that just traveled down from, let's say, Tibbins coming down from Connecticut and fishing Hartwell. You know, you fish Hartwell for the last 20 years of your life. You go out there and you just wreck him. He comes down there and has to figure it out. You know, who cares? So yeah, it's all about where you live more than how good you are.
I think that's
applicable across the entire fishing industry rather than just kayak fishing. It helps in the kayak fishing because you can't power up your 250 outboard and run across the lake and figure out a different pattern. You already know where the fish are. If you live close enough for a local / national event, you can make that transition right away.
Yeah. And I think it all depends on what your goals are. You know, for example, I started fishing, shout out to Frankie Provolone. God, I forget his spelling, his last name or pronouncing it. But with Slay Nation Tournament, that was where I was kind of like my school. And it was a bunch of like, you know, a group of about 20 of us, local guys, great hammers, you know, Gary Peck, Corey Geisen Ford, Jeremy McCormick, Matt Biles, Matt Wallace, great guys, but it wasn't intimidating. It wasn't like the Guillermo Gonzalez, Ross Nydex, Christian Fishings of the world. So it was a little bit more of a grassroots, hanging out with your friends, fishing, not the intimidating factor. But if you're going to be fishing national trails, it's like, what are your goals? Now, Christopher just mentioned he fishes the Texas Kayak Bass League and the Jackabass. I've never fished Jackabass, so I don't know that one. But Christopher, if you're fishing Texas Kayak Bass League, you're already fishing a national trail. Because I can't think of a trail that's more talented or more loaded with talent than the down one. Or maybe any Tennessee, Texas Bass Nation in Tennessee, where Jordan Marshall, UN Miner, and all those great anglers from Tennessee.
Yeah.
But if you're fishing Texas Kayak Bass League, dude, you're fishing already with the best of the best. That is a loaded with talent. So I wouldn't make this. And there's also like, if the trail comes close to you, a national trail, go fish it. This iron sharpens iron. You're not going to know the feeling of fishing a two-day, kind of like the more professional approach to fishing those trails and how everything is handled. And then if you're talking about chasing AOY, going up to the Susky, or for Jack Tibbins coming all the way to Texas from Connecticut. And obviously, you kind of want to have some type of success locally to make you feel comfortable. If you're not catching a check locally, at least every once in a while, and you're going to be investing, like Jack Tibbins just mentioned, $2,000 from Connecticut to Texas. You know, that fishing a national trail, it's going to be even harder to catch a check. So keep that in mind. But it's basically like everybody's different in that aspect. But shout out to anybody that does it. Again, can't say enough about, you know, Jack Tibbins, dude, $2,000, 30-hour drive. That's, your day is coming. And when it comes, it's going to be even more enjoyable than ever. And again, there's different approach. Like you mentioned, Ryan, you're more of a social media content creator. And this is maybe just something that you do along the ways as part of your journey, but it's not your focus. It's not what's your main goal. Your main goal is maybe something more in social media. Obviously, you have your family goals and all that, which supersedes any goals that you might have in this space. But when it comes to social media, I want to go back to that. We mentioned your goals in tournament. What are your goals in social media that you want to kind of have check off before you maybe move on to other stuff?
You know, that's a big question. You know, goals in the social media realm seem to be changing more than I'd say the fishing goals do, because there's just so much, there's so many variables that are always changing. You know, you love to, you know, let's be honest, you love to get paid from social media.
It helps with the cost of doing this.
Let's not beat around the bush about it. You know, you do social media because, first of all, it needs to be fun for you. You can't go into social media saying, well, I'm only doing this for work. I only do this because I want to get paid to do it. That's the wrong mindset. you're going to burn out so fast, you're not even going to know what hit you. You got to go into it, want to have a little bit of fun with it. The second thing is you do have to want to make money if you want to grow on it. If you go into social media wanting to get stuff for free, that's great. But really, you're doing yourself a disservice, but you're also kind of screwing over the next guy. If you go in and you say, well, I'm going to do all this work and I'm just going to let you undercut me and pay me, you know, in product, then these companies are going to just keep paying for unreliable content because they can just change you out every 2 months and then get the next guy then that just wants, you know, $100 for the free product. But if you'll go into it with a mindset of, I want to work really hard and I want to make money doing this, then you're going to show up, you're going to put really good content out, and then these brands are going to pay you cash. And then once you're done working with them, you know, whether that be you just time out with it or you just move on, then they recognize that potential of a good content creator and being valuable. So they're willing to pay those cash deals to the next guy because you did such a good job. And that's really the way that it needs to be looked at. And so I guess to go back to your question is, what's my goal? My goal is to make brand deals better for the next guy.
That's a good.
I want the guy that comes after me to make money. You know, I want my buddies to make money. Every brand that I've ever worked with, they say, hey, who's another person we can work with? The next guy I say is the guy that put me to where I'm at, the guy that shoots my content. This guy works really hard. He shoots content with me. You know, I've hooked him up with some product. He loves the product. He's wearing the product already, shooting content in it. Why not give it to the next guy that's working hard for it? And so I really just want to make that social media brand deals better for the next guy. That's really, I guess, the better goal of it.
Yeah, it's an interesting a rabbit hole when you think about where social media is, whether you like it or whether people like them or not. Like, to take the example of it, like the ones that kind of like busted open the doors were the Guggen Squad. Again, whether you like them or not, credit where credit is due, guys have their own bait company and all that. The way they marketing go about it, you know, yeah, the way they go about it is each one to have their own opinion. Yeah. But that's a reality of it. We're talking about some, you know, teenage kids or young adults that start a YouTube channel and now have their own bait company and make a living out of it. That was not the case back in the days.
Based on
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is, just what you're saying, whether you like them or not, you have to recognize greatness. Yeah. And, you know, you can say that against any niche, you know, sports world, outdoor world, you know, whatever. If you're great, you're great. And they're great marketing. You know, don't get me wrong, they were first on scene, whatever. That makes a big difference. But they marketed themselves so well to that young generation. They didn't even try to go for the older guys. They went straight to the younger generations. And their marketing was exactly what needed to be. And they hammered it. And, you know, they're massive because of it. You know, like them or not, they did what they were good at.
They turned, in my opinion, one of the biggest credits that I can give them is they turned an old man sport, which was kind of the way it was viewed, into a young man sport, a something cool and trendy for teenagers to do. Like when you look at their events, it's full of teenage kids just, you know, imitating their hairstyle, the glasses with John B and all that. That's great. I mean, that's growing the sport. Like, think about it. Newer generations have to get involved with this for this to continue growing. And even though it's individual to each side, if less people get into fishing, less investors get into making products, less investors get involved into making kayaks, less money is going into product innovation. So it's all in the best interest for the next generation to make interest. And that, to me, that's the biggest compliment you can give them. But you did mention a great point. You know, you don't want to be out there doing freebies. Value yourself, but also understanding, for example, Ryan, you have over $100,000 followers. Somebody that has 2,000 followers, obviously you have to understand your value. You want to value yourself, but understanding that when a company looks at that, they're going to be like, well, Who do I want promoting my product? Yeah. Who am I paying? And I think it's important for A, to enjoy what you're doing. If there are trends there to follow and you love doing it, follow them. But I also think don't get too caught up in trying for the numbers, and where it comes to a point when you're not enjoying fishing. Because if you only got to kayak fish or to bass fish just to create content, that's different. But 99% of us, I mean, anybody that's, dude, go to college, go to someplace else. This is not the place where you're going to make a living out of it if you're doing it just to make money. And you have to love what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have anything against the guy that's taken the pure, you know, discount. You know, let's be honest. Every single angler that has a social media channel has had a bait company come and say, I'm going to give you 20% off if you post content for me. And they take it.
You're still the customer.
Yeah, you're a customer realistically, but you know, let's say that you've only been on any platform social media wise for 6 months, and somebody says, "I'm going to give you 20% off." Well, you were paying 100% for their product already, so why not take the discount and keep doing what you're doing? But don't lock yourself into contracts where you're committed to a year's worth of buying their product exclusively. Be smart about it. But then I still do product deals to this day. You know, I probably did one within the past 6 months, realistically, if I think about it, where I don't take any cash. I take their free product and then I turn around and I use it and I shoot content with it, you know, but I only do that in product that I want and that I need. Exactly. I don't do that with, you know, yesterday I got an email from somebody saying, "Hey, will you support our alpaca socks?" No, I'm not gonna wear your alpaca socks out on the kayak and promote your product. Thanks, but no thanks.
Alpaca socks? Is that real? It just made that up.
That's a real thing. Like, they actually emailed me yesterday.
That is crazy. And that was a follow-up
email. They emailed me like 2 days before that.
That is crazy, alpacas. I thought you were making that up.
No, that's a real thing.
I'm like, where do you came up with alpaca socks?
Yeah, you get some weird emails whenever you link your email to your social medias. But the other side of that is Hook reached out to me out of the blue last year. Wanting a product deal. And I took it, obviously. You know, great company, great product. But I got it in a random email and it turned out to be a great product deal. And, you know, here we are, year number two, re-up the contract and, you know, bigger and better things. And sometimes those product deals are where it's at. That's how you get your foot in the door with a great company. So don't be afraid to do the product deals, but don't do yourself or the next guy a disservice by locking yourself into these contracts to make yourself their guaranteed customer for a year.
Yeah, that I agree. Like, if you're only getting a discount on a product, you're just a client with special privileges, but you're still just a client. I think it's important. There's always levels to this, but like you mentioned, you want to, if you're going to sponsor a product, whether you're getting it for free or getting paid, you want to be something that you truly believe in and find it useful. Nowadays, it's not like back in the days when YouTube started, where you can post on YouTube and create your brand. People are new to this and will be very, I think in general, people were gullible about this. About, oh, look, this is great. This is a great product. Oh, this guy is fishing with this. I think now we're at an era where the newer generation understand what social media is and understand it's a new form of commerce. So they're more educated now. And I think when you don't really love a product, you're just doing it for the money, you don't really trust this product has no value to you other than the sponsorship money, it's going to show. Eventually, it's going to show. And I think the other thing I went through this earlier, a few months ago, where I partnered up with Norsk Lithium. By the way, you also have to do the legwork. I found out Norsk Lithium because I went to ICAST and 2 years consecutively going to ask ICAST, investing going to iCast, where somebody actually took notice. It's like, hey, this is the second time we see you here recording content and mm-hmm. asking about products. We want to bring you in. That you have to do the legwork. You know, posting yeah. sometimes is not judging enough unless you have, like Ryan, a huge account. That's where you want to be, where companies are actually contacting you and you're not begging for companies to or just asking for companies. You know, they recognize you before you recognize them, kind of thing. So that's where you are right now, Ryan. And credit to you for that. But the other thing is, once
a certain level on that where you can't get ahead of yourself. You can't think, I have, let's just say, 20,000 followers. And you say, well, I'm not going to work with this company because of they work with so-and-so, or they're not willing to pay me cash. There's people that come into this with the wrong mindset, and they believe that because they have a following that they're owed something. And that's not what the way it is. That's why I say, if you don't go into this with a desire to be doing the content, then you're going to burn out and it's just going to suck the whole way around. So there has to be a certain level of humility where you are doing this because you do it, and the brand deals that you get, you know, be thankful for it. And then work really freaking hard on the backside of it. You know, maybe you don't have to do as much legwork, but you need to be working even harder once you get the deal, because you didn't have to do the legwork to get it.
Correct. And that's kind of what the point that I wanted was going into as well. So when you get a product, especially endemic and non-endemic sponsorship are two different things. Like non-endemic is people, companies, maybe an insurance company that are interested in you promoting, you know, you have a kayak, hey, I got my insurance company, I got it insured with X company, go to this insurance agent. I've seen some of them that's growing because, you know, now kayaks, you know, you have your trailers and all of it, some of them. So it's growing, and now you see insurance companies that are offering recreational vehicle activities, insurance for your kayak and your trailers and all that. So that's a non-endemic. You can hop around on that. People are not going to care. But let's say you have a rod company that sponsors you. That is not something you want to start jumping up and down. Like when I got with Norsk Lithium, it's because I tried Norsk Lithium. My deal with them, and they were very clear, you're not part of the team until we get you the batteries, you try them out, and you tell me if you like them or not. If you don't love them, then there's no point of doing this. Once I got with Norsk Lithium, I remember another separate company was interested, like, hey, what are you getting from Norsk Lithium? Like, regardless, I'm not switching. Because I've had people that follow my account that have asked about my experience in Norsk Lithium, and I've actually bought batteries based, and I'm proud of that, but I stand by private conversations that I've had. And I said, this is why I love them. Whether they're the best batteries in the world or not, I don't know. I haven't tried everybody, but they're good enough for me, and this is why. And when you get, you know, people that follow your account and actually told me, hey, I bought it, I love it, thank you for the advice, great. Now I had a separate battery company show interest in what I'm doing. I'm like, even if you offer me a better deal, I can't do it. Because what about that follower that bought this battery because of my feedback, and now I'm going to switch and say you devalue your content, you devalue yourself as a content creator in the endemic sponsorship. Again, let me be very specific. Companies that are making fishing and kayak fishing products, if you're jumping from one competitor to another, you're losing your value, you're losing your trust. So a sponsorship has someone that you trust in their product, you trust in their company, you trust in their vision. And listen, if at some point it doesn't work, then maybe somewhere along the lines you move. But if you're moving up and down from one endemic company to another, it's just not a good look.
Honestly, that could be a slippery slope at the same time, because, like, let's just continue to talk about that specifically. So batteries. I use ProGuide batteries, and, you know, that's nothing to say against Norsk or
– no, absolutely. Or, like I said, I don't know if they're the batteries. Best or not, but yeah.
You know, I don't know that ProGuide are the best batteries. And they're not even a current sponsor of mine. They were a product deal only, discount deal, back when I needed batteries. I was like, yeah, I'll do a product deal with you because I need batteries. And I've been running them for 3 years now and love them. Haven't had a single issue, not a single issue with a ProGuide battery. Before that, I was running, you know, knockoff Amazon specials and having issues every other outing.
No.
So I can go on and I can say I love ProGuide batteries and they're not a sponsor of mine and I can pitch them to anybody I want because they're great batteries and I don't care, you know, what anybody else is using because that's what I've used. And so I can preach to that without worrying about, did I hurt somebody else's feelings? Am I lying to somebody? Am I saying it because somebody's paying me to do it? No, because they never paid me to begin with. Same thing goes for rods, reels, and most of all, tackle. Tackle is the most over-pitched product in the sponsorship world. And I say that with apparel being probably a close second. How many soft plastic makers make a cross style jig trailer? Probably 1,000 across the United States. And they all probably get bit just as much as the most highest priced cross style trailer you can imagine, realistically. It's you can't go out and pitch those products and then jump back and forth and say, well, this no name brand is the best versus this no name brand, or this big brand is bigger than this big brand. They're all going to get bit almost the exact same amount. You know, maybe you get into a slight difference if you start talking about something like Berkeley Maxent or the Net Bait Fuel. Where you're doing a lot of more injections than just the standard salt impregnated baits. Maybe. And that's a big debatable topic. So I don't want to go down that too far, but you jumping back and forth is kind of my point that I'm trying to make on this. I got kind of derailed on it. But jumping back and forth on a plastics is the hardest thing. And I deal with it a lot with companies that want me to pitch baits. And I say, I'm not going to pitch your baits because affiliate programs are trash. I don't care what anybody said. Affiliate programs are trash. They're burned out in the social media world. You can have the hottest cross style bait. And I just keep going back to cross style. It doesn't matter. You can have the hottest soft plastic bait on the market. And if multiple brands sell it, so Fish USA, one of my favorites, Modern Outdoor Tackle, and then Bass Pro Shops, they all sell it. If John Doe has a discount code over Bass Pro Shops, he doesn't care that I gave him an affiliate code. He's going to go over to hit where his stuff is already set up. He's got his own discount. They've already got his credit card info. They've got a shipping address. He doesn't have to make an account. He's going to go over there and he's going to buy the product. Thanks, Ryan, for giving me the product and telling me which product was working. Now I'm going to go buy it where it's convenient for me. So pitching your products and jumping back and forth is only hurting your respect in the outdoors world.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Soft plastics and all that. Listen, if you're going out there, hey, and putting videos, this is the base. I see ones that are like so cringy. I see somebody fishing at a pond. It's like, how fast can I catch a fish with this craw? Throws it, catches a fish. Again, we're more people, generations now are more educated about everybody can see you fishing out of a pond. It's a lot easier. It's like, okay, if you're a tournament angler, if you're somebody that's does other type of fishing other than TikTok and Instagram. I'm not, no offense to you, Ryan, anything like that. Just in general, if you're doing like tournament anglers, right? And you're saying, okay, this is the best craw out there, better be sure you're using that on tournament day. People will see what you're throwing. And if it's not, then again, it comes down to, I always say, and I've learned this from that bass fishing dude, Brandon Mays, says, I'd rather have a small following of loyal people that trust me and know who I am than having hundreds of thousands of followers. Again, no offense. If you have 100,000 followers, that's awesome. I'm not saying anything wrong with that. But having 100,000 followers of people that that you're not really reaching out to them because maybe your views are not getting to all of them. So it's very important that the people that do follow you, you're always going to have those hardcore followers. I have, you know, people that follow my podcast religiously, listen to my podcast. I email, message them, and I give them my honest feedback and everything. That, to me, has more value than having 10,000 followers. Because it shows, to me, that's more valuable, in my opinion.
Yeah, so Jack has a really good point right there. It just disappeared. It said something about service. There it is. So it says product can be great, but if service sucks, that's where I run into problems. So that's where, as a social media guy, you have to be really careful what you're endorsing, because you just became customer service for them.
Yep.
If their customer service sucks and you are promoting their product and an issue comes up where you promoted it, somebody bought it, they tried to reach out to the company and the company is sucking at getting back to them, they're now going to come to you and they're going to say, hey, I'm having issues. How do I get a hold of it? And now you're that intermediary that's playing third wheel. And that's a nightmare. Nobody wants to be part of that.
I agree. I've had companies to send me jigs, for example. Hey, what do you think of this? And I said, you can send me it if I like it. I'll post it or something. I straight up message them. I sent a video. This sucks because of this. This, like, the molding is horrible. It's all chalky. The hood keeper is bent. I am sorry, but I'm not promoting this on my page. The quality of the product is bad. They thank you for it. They're like, no, I appreciate your feedback. Like I told them, I'm not going to trash you online because you were nice enough to consider me to, you know, make a deal and maybe get some paid promotion for it. But I'm not going to do it if this sucks. I could have taken the deal, maybe get a couple of dollars with it, and also some free jigs and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, if there's like somebody that follows me gets this product based on what I put out there and they see how bad this is, I would be embarrassed. And you can bet that I've lost trust, or that person has lost trust in me and probably is going to unfollow me and tell everybody,
not only that,
do not follow.
Exactly. Boom. Yeah. That's where it is. It's not even about that one person. It is about the 10 people that they tell, and then the 5 people that they tell, and then the 3 people that they tell. It's just going to waterfall. You can't do that. It's just going to backfire on you almost every time. Just don't do it. Back product that's good, that you have true faith in. Know what you're talking about ahead of time. Otherwise, exactly that. It's gonna come back to bite you. You're gonna lose followership. You're gonna lose engagement, and you're gonna lose the credibility that you've built.
Yeah, and also another thing that I've seen that I caution people is, like, if your social media content is just sponsorship or commercial heavy, like every post you can tell you're promoting this product, especially products that are non-endemic. It doesn't become enjoyable to me as a follower if every time you post something, you're promoting a product. And it's plain to see that you're promoting it. I don't see anything. You're not bringing any enjoyment to what you're doing. For example, one of the things that I love about you, and I'll talk about Texas River Junkie. It's another one. Similar style content creation than you were. I was like, dude, this guy's having an awesome journey. Yeah. It's having an awesome journey, and he's sharing this awesome, and you can tell that he's enjoying it, and therefore you kind of enjoy it. It's like watching – I love watching comedy reels where the comedian just cracks up. I was watching the one of Saturday Night Live the other day where they were doing the Beavis and Butthead sketch, and the – I forgot the name of the sketch actor for Saturday Night Live. She cracked up where she couldn't contain her laughing. The scene is not as funny as it is. It's just watching her, not a comedian, not be able to control her laughter at the sketch made me laugh. It goes with social media. If I see Ryan Reed enjoying his journey, enjoying what he's posting, I'm going to enjoy it too. But it's hard to project enjoyment in a lifestyle. And I love, by the way, your captions on your social media where it's like introduction to the, or something along the introducing you to the life of the kayak fishing lifestyle, which is why I named this episode what I named it. Because it really caught my eye, because it really transmits what you're doing. Going back to what I was saying, if you're promoting a product, that doesn't come through. It just doesn't.
And so I think the other side of that is, so one, there's a lot of people that grow their page and then they turn it into a pure sales page where now all they're doing is promoting their own sales of product. And I hate that. Nobody actually wants to be sold at ever. Nobody wants to be sold at. That's a plain fact. That's not an opinion. Nobody wants to be sold to. So now you're selling to them. Now you just lost your following, whatever. Even if they don't unfollow you, they just muted you and they don't even want to see your page anymore. The other side of that is you talked about the lifestyle aspect of certain pages, the organic content of just somebody out having a good time of any page. You know, Texas River Junkie, I see a lot of his stuff. I love a lot of his content. You don't get that if you're not genuinely enjoying what you're doing. And whenever you're trying that hard, then it really comes off. And I'm not a funny guy. I love comedy. I really do. Nate Bergatsky.
Oh my God. He's hilarious. Favorite
human being in the world right now. I actually have tickets to his show coming up. I can't wait.
Dude, that guy's hilarious.
Yeah. So, but I'm not a funny guy and I don't like memes. I don't like meme content. I don't like meme related content. I don't go to Instagram because I want to laugh at a fishing funny video. I don't even like Bill Dance content. Let's be real. You know, he's famous. Who cares? But I don't like his content. I don't think that it's organic. I don't think it's true to yourself. I'm a very dry guy and you don't see me posting funny content. You know, I laugh every once in a while. You'll see me some stuff where maybe I say something funny, but I'm not a funny guy. My content is about what's happening on the water. What's the kayak doing? What's the fish doing? It's organic. That's what's happening in that moment.
Yeah. And that's another point I see. And listen, I'm not bashing on anybody that does comedy. I know there's a lot of fishing content creations that it's all a green room and, you know, using a trending video and making a funny video. I laugh. I think it's funny, but you have to think about what your brand was it showing. Are you branding yourself as a comedian or are you branding yourself as somebody that's legit? I think I just lost Ryan. Somebody that's legit involved in bass fishing and wants to have that reputation of a good bass fisherman, a good content creator. That's two different things. And I'm not throwing shade at anybody that just does green screen comedy with bass fishing related. If that's what you want to do, that's great. But I think a lot of companies right now are understanding that you are going to get a lot of followers, but are those followers interested in the comedy side of things, or they're more interested in what you're fishing, how you're fishing, what products do you use that would help them fish better or would help them enjoy more fishing? So I think for people that are watching, listening, that's very important to understand. Again, I'm not throwing shade. You can grow your social media with comedy, and that's great. But you want to make sure that you're adding something more to that, because big companies that are willing to pay money, big companies that are willing to pay money are going to look at that. You may have 200, you may have a million followers, but if it's all comedy, green screen, they understand that a lot of people are just going to follow you because of comedy, not really because they're interested in fishing products. So that, just keep that in mind, I think, for everyone that's watching or listening. Ryan, I know I lost you for a second, but I don't know if you got the gist of it from what we're talking about, the memes and all that. You know, that it's great if you want, that's the route you want to go. But again, what companies now are understanding is like, it's not just the amount of followers. It's like, are these followers following because other factors other than phishing, or these followers follow you because, hey, everybody that's watching my content is involved in phishing because that's all I do? I don't think, Ryan, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
And that's one of the things that I love about yours, like you mentioned about your content creation. And I know we got a little bit sidetracked with the technology here, kind of failed us. But we lost you for a second, Ryan. But one of the things that I wanted to highlight is your content is strictly fishing. Like, you're always on a kayak. You always have a product. Maybe yeah. not setting the hook on every single reel, but it's all related to bass fishing and the lifestyle that is.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't appreciate the B-roll of the outdoors. Yeah. The hook sets are great. The landing fish is great. But, you know, how many anglers do you know say, man, I don't care about the fishing as much as I do getting out there early, and the sunsets, the sunrises, the awesome views that you're having are so much better than every fish catch that you can imagine.
Yep.
You know, I've seen sunsets that beat an entire year's worth of fishing. I love to fish. I love fighting fish. Honestly, I love landing fish. I love holding fish. I can sit at sunrise and be happier in that moment than I am with however many fish I catch that day, plain and simple. And, yep. and people don't appreciate that I call it that B-roll side of the content enough. And it's truly amazing. And there are a lot of people that do love that. But, you know, I posted a video like yesterday of me going through like a small rapid in my Flipkat.
Yeah, I was watching that one.
And it did pretty good, you know, for content. You know, there's no fish catches in there. That's just a kayak on the water. You know, people like to see what that watercraft can do. So that B-roll footage can be really underwhelming to some, but very useful. When it comes to drawing that engagement, drawing the people to curiosity of what your product is.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, I know you're like you mentioned, you're a stay-at-home dad, your wife works as a nurse. So I know we had you for an hour and 28 minutes, and I want to be conscious of your time. As much as I enjoy having you on the podcast and sharing your wisdom to my audience and enjoying talking to you, I do want to, you know, kind of start wrapping it up so you can get back to getting some good shot, I imagine. But I wanted to give you a chance to, talking about sponsorship, you know, thank anybody that you want to thank. If there's any companies, any sponsorships that you want to, you know, give a shout out, please do. And where can people follow you on social media? And what can people look forward to seeing on your social media if they don't follow you already?
So, I mean, first things first, Eco Fishing Shop. You know, I know you're partnered with Mariner Sales, and I love Duke and I love Mariner. When I was down there, I visited the shop multiple times, but I've been with Eco Fishing Shop since the beginning. They were the first company that really that bought in on me. And, you know, I appreciate them, and I continue to work with them in terms that work best for both sides. I'm not interested in trying to make a profit off of them. They believe in me and I believe in them. They're a great company. And I'm going to continue to work with them throughout the years as much as I can. So thanks to them for always having my back. And then, you know, this year I'm not officially partnered with Old Town Fishing, but last year I was, and I still fish with the Old Town stuff, and I'm really close to the Old Town guys. So shout out to them. One of these days I might get back with them. Hook is my biggest reel sponsor. When you talk about like what they do for me and what I do for them, they are my biggest sponsor. They do a lot for me. They're super, super good company, honestly. They're very interested in making themselves better. They're not a company that thinks that they've got it figured out. I know that there's some outdoor companies that think that they know what's best and they don't. This company doesn't. They know that the anglers know best, the people know best, and they're always seeking to improve the product that they're putting out for them. So that's awesome. And that's what I like to be partnered with. And then I also work with Revo sunglasses, and I work with Blue Storm PFDs, two of the best products. Obviously, as a kayak tournament fisherman, you're required to have a PFD on. But even when I'm not in a tournament, I've got a PFD on every day anyways. And Blue Storm is honestly the most comfortable I've ever had. I've had Mustangs. I've had NRS. Blue Storm knocked it out of the park with their product. Great product. Love it. And then Revo, we talked about what happened at Possum Kingdom. Sight fishing, you got to have good glasses to sight fish. Dirty water, clear water, doesn't matter. You got to have good polarization sunglasses that are comfortable all day long. They're not fogging up. I've got a pair. I've got three pairs. But my Finleys are actually what I prefer. They're super lightweight, super polarized. And I was able to see fish that, you know, maybe somebody else wasn't able to see as well. Because like I said, there were other boats that went through there, but my fish were there all day and I could see them and catch them. And I needed good sunglasses for that. Revo.
Oh, I think we lost Ryan there. Okay. You're back. You're back. You're good.
Where'd I cut out?
Yeah. You said you starting say Revo. You mentioned how Revo works great and you were able to see the bedding bass on yeah. PK.
So without my Revo sunglasses at Pico, you know, that would have been a whole different game. And Revo makes great sunglasses. They're super lightweight. You know, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure their selling line is they're the lightest frame or lightest lenses on the market. I think it's their selling point. And that's absolutely true. I've had Costas, I've had Revos, I've had Smiths, I've had knockoff brands, I've had them all. My Revos are my absolute favorite. Love them, love them, love them. All of their different brands or lines. So love them. You know, and then really the biggest people that I have to thank, and that's goes back to my social media side, is that's my buddy Brandon, you know, Dust Off Fishing, my buddy Jake Ilyakin. Super great guys that are so knowledgeable and so good behind the camera for me. They don't get enough respect on the page that I post out. You know, I can tag them a million times. They don't get the respect that they're due. You know, not only are they great behind the cameras, but they're just great people to just spend time with, you know, on the water, on long trips. I've done trips with them both. You know, it's good to have those people in your corner that just make life enjoyable. And that's what you need on those big long trips like we do, you know. And then my family, you know, you talk about I'm a stay-at-home dad, and you know, my mom, my wife takes care of a lot of stuff for us. You know, the money that I make doing social media, that is pennies on the dollar to what she does. So you know, and then I've got a great set of in-laws that help us with our son. And you know, I couldn't imagine trying to be away from my son for that extended period of time without people that love him and are there for his needs. So that's one of the biggest things for me.
Well, again, and where can people follow you, Ryan? For those that don't follow you, what can look forward to on your social media?
Social media, pretty much anything. If you type in The Real Yak Dragger, you're going to find me. Social media with YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok are my biggest. I have Threads too, but Threads and YouTube are basically the same thing with me. I just don't do anything with them really, but they are there. Yeah, you know, Instagram and TikTok are definitely the easiest for me, most consistent. If you're looking for my regular updates, Instagram is definitely where I'm most active.
Awesome. So thank you so much, Ryan, for coming to the podcast and sharing your wisdom to not just myself, but our listeners and people that follow us on social media. I'm sure they enjoyed it as much as I did. Wish you the best in the rest of the season. And I know, like you said, there's a lot of decisions you're going to tackle, family decisions you have to make in the present and near future. And we wish you the best and, you know, that you get the right decisions and everything works out the way you need it to work out to move forward. So again, thank you for taking the time, man. I wish you the best. And for those out there listening and watching, you know, we thank you for your support. Jack Tibbins, Three the Hard Way, Christopher Muniz, thank you for commenting. If you follow us on podcast, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, feel free to leave a rating review and write your review on it. And we do appreciate it. Thank you so much, everyone. Wear your PFDs and have a great night.
Thanks.